My guest at this time is Matthew Staver. He's the chairman of Liberty Council, and he joins me now to offer his reaction to President Trump's selection of federal appeals court judge Brett Kavanaugh as his nominee to replace Anthony Kennedy on the U.S. Supreme Court. Specifically, does Judge Kavanaugh meet the criteria based on his paper trail that we know of to this point, the type of justice that Matt would like to see? And Matt, always good to have you with us. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Well, from the social conservative perspective, the reaction to Kavanaugh seems to be, we think he'll be pretty good, but Trump had better options. What's your reaction?
Well, Trump had a number of options, and certainly Amy Barrett is a great option. And from what I hear, she'll be the next one if there's another vacancy, and I certainly hope there is. But Brett Kavanaugh is also an excellent choice. His credentials are impeccable. He is exceptionally qualified to serve on the U.S. Supreme Court as a justice, but also from a judicial philosophy standpoint, I think that's what really is of interest to most social conservatives or most people that are interested in the court and the rule of law. I'm very pleased with what I find in his past statements regarding his views on the rule of law. And he actually made a statement during his confirmation hearing or his confirmation interview when he was announced by President Trump, and he gave a statement that his judicial philosophy is quite straightforward and simple. Judges are to interpret the law, not make it. And there's a lot packed in there. And in fact, if you look back at his speech that he gave in 2017 during Constitution Week, it is exceptional in terms of his judicial philosophy. He points to former Chief Justice William Rehnquist as being his first judicial hero. That's his words. And the reason being is that he ultimately wanted to bring the court away from a social policy-making entity, which it's not supposed to do or be, to a rule of law entity, which is what it's exactly supposed to do. He ultimately felt that the Constitution should be amended by the people, not by a single judge. The laws should be passed by the legislature, and judges should have no authority to become social architects of what they personally feel or believe the country should be heading toward. And that's a philosophy that he embraces. So I think when you look at his judicial philosophy, it is exactly the kind of judge that we need on the U.S. Supreme Court.
What's the difference in the approach between an appeals court judge and a Supreme Court justice? Because a lot of folks who are a little bit concerned about him on social issues say, well, in his confirmation hearing in 2006, he seemed to say that he considered Roe to be an established precedent. I don't know if they're his exact words. And he also sided against the complainants on Obamacare, although I believe his decision was more on a technicality than the actual merits of the case. So what's your reaction to those concerns?
Well, on both of those, there's a big difference between a court of appeals or lower court judge versus a U.S. Supreme Court justice. They have to follow the law as it's been established by the U.S. Supreme Court. But a Supreme Court justice can actually have the opportunity to overrule bad precedent. In fact, that's exactly what happened in this term with a 40-plus-year-old precedent overturn that goes back to the 1970s in a 5-4 decision. The Supreme Court finally sided with the First Amendment over the objective of unions. And back in the 70s, they put aside the First Amendment because they wanted to promote unionism. And that was an ideological decision. The Supreme Court finally walked away from that. Justices on the U.S. Supreme Court have that prerogative. However, if a lower court were applying that same principle, they'd have to follow the U.S. Supreme Court. But as it relates to Obamacare, I think it's a misinterpretation to say that he sided with those that were with the government on Obamacare. I know exactly what he's talking about. I spent a lot of time on a very technical aspect called the Anti-Injunction Act. He didn't rule on the merits. In fact, he specifically said that his decision was not on the merits of the law. Had he ruled on the merits based upon his judicial philosophy, he would not say that the Commerce Clause authorizes the government to force people to purchase a product or a service. And he's actually said that before and even after that particular decision. But it was a very technical piece of decision, and it was a federal law known as the Anti-Injunction Act. And the real question there was not whether the law was constitutional or not. He never got to that question. But whether the federal courts at that moment in time had the authority to review that particular piece of legislation, or did they have to wait until a couple of months or even a year or so later.
So you see it more as a good example of judicial restraint.
I see it as somebody who was trying to follow the law as the federal court, looking at a federal law known as the Anti-Injunction Act. That's a very complicated situation. I spent a lot of time in it. In fact, I had to deal with that in the first lawsuit that was ever filed against Obamacare. And indeed, the court in my case ultimately ruled that the Anti-Injunction Act prohibited the court from actually reviewing the law, that it was premature. The U.S. Supreme Court ultimately sided the other way on a split decision.
And one of the things, Matt, that you and I talked about back in the 2016 campaign is that a lot of social conservatives, yourself included, weren't necessarily enamored with Trump during the primary season. But once he became the nominee, you and many others made the choice that there was a vacant U.S. Supreme Court seat, and who knows how many others would become open in the next 4 years. And that was enough reason to choose Donald Trump over Hillary Clinton. Now that you've got two nominees from this president, what's your reaction?
Well, President Donald Trump has kept his promise. A lot of people voted for him because of the U.S. Supreme Court. And the reason is the U.S. Supreme Court has gotten into politics, which it needs to get out of politics. It needs to get out of social policy making. And the right justices can, in fact, extricate the Supreme Court from social policy making and put it back to where it's supposed to be, an institution that follows and respects the rule of law. That's what President Donald Trump promised. He made good on that promise right after he was inaugurated, with the nomination of Neil Gorsuch, who's turned out to be an excellent justice, and now he's got his second chance. So this is the reason why so many people voted for President Trump, and he is certainly keeping his promise.
And lastly, Matt, what do you expect in this confirmation process? Obviously, it was heated even before we knew what the name was. You had protesters out there on Monday night with names of four different potential nominees, and they had to cast three of them to the ground so they could hold up the one for the nominee that was actually named. So obviously, this is going to be ugly, but ultimately, what do you expect to transpire here in the next few weeks?
Well, I think there's going to be a lot of opposition against Kavanaugh from those that want to make sure that the court continues in its aggressive activism role, which it has no business being in that particular role. And there's some people that are so committed to the issue of abortion, they believe that the Supreme Court has been, and they want it to continue to be, their hero and their flag bearer. And so there's going to be a lot of opposition with that respect. It could get very ugly. I anticipate it will. There's going to be a lot of lies that are perpetrated about him. And I think we need to be careful what we see and what we read in the media before we pass it on, because there's going to be a lot of information out there. I think there's even going to be false so-called conservative groups that are created by the left and make it look like there's a division within those conservatives or those that believe in the rule of law. So it's going to get vicious, and it's going to get very ugly in many respects. I think we need to pray, and we need to be involved in this process. We are a few months away from having a justice on the U.S. Supreme Court that respects the rule of law, and the future of this country ultimately being enormously impacted by the future decisions of this high court.
Matt, just to follow up on one thing you said there, do you know of liberal groups that are planning to pose as conservatives to express opposition?
Well, you know, George Soros and others, they've created a lot of these front groups. They do like so-called religious groups or Catholic groups that oppose individuals or policies and so forth. They have like nuns that are supposedly part of this group that are pro-abortion. This is a lot of fake organizations that have been created by people like George Soros, and certainly I think that's going to happen in the near future.
We'll be watching, and we'll probably be checking in as this process continues. Thank you, Matt, very much for your time, as always.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Matthew Staver is chairman of Liberty Counsel. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.